The killing of three police officers in Baton Rouge, Louisiana over the weekend is the second high-profile shooting of police officers by a military veteran in recent weeks. The Dallas gunman also served in the military, and the horrible Fort Hood shooting back in 2009 was carried out by a U.S. Army major. Is military service some path of domestic radicalization? What do veterans think about the impression of radical, angry veterans with guns, raising questions about all veterans? And when veterans are polled about access to guns, 90% say they would support some form of gun control. Retired General David Petraeus, along with other retired veterans, such as General Stanley McChrystal and Admiral Eric Olson, are part of the Veterans Coalition for Common Sense to put their support behind responsible ownership. Chris Marvin is a retired U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter pilot, now a principal at Marvin Strategies. It's a consulting firm that takes a look at veteran-related strategies. Marvin believes the Baton Rouge and Dallas shootings do raise some alarming issues.
We've been dealing for a number of years with misperceptions of veterans, and I think this brings about what I would hesitate to call the Rambo effect, this idea that people see veterans as sort of one of three things. Either veterans are these wonderful heroes, they're these poor victims, or they're these terrible monsters. And in this case, unfortunately, it sounds like the third. But when you look more closely at these individuals, they certainly don't represent the veteran population at large. And they don't even have a military history that would reinforce some of the inappropriate stereotypes we carry, such as PTSD that a lot of folks in our society like to label many, many veterans with. As soon as you sort of turn the page and learn a little bit about these folks, you realize that their veteran status probably doesn't have a lot to do with the terrible crimes they committed.
Do you think the Veterans Administration or the government bears any responsibility to follow individuals, whether for simply assuring that their mental health is in good shape, following them in terms of being able to help them as they move on with their lives, and that these individuals, you know, were kind of on their own with an internal narrative that led them to this very, very brutal, you know, crime?
To say that any government administration should be looking after 22 million Americans, which is how many veterans we have, I think is a little bit overstepping that they could keep tabs on every single one. You know, that said, I think the conversation about these two guys being veterans actually becomes a little bit of a distraction. I think in all these cases where we have a mass shooting, whether it's perpetrated against police officers or against any group, school children or people at a holiday party, I think you have a lot of society asking questions, and they're looking for something to attach blame to say, well, there's something about that person that's either different from me or different from what I consider normal, and that must be why they did it. But you can't lump all of these folks together with all veterans. You can't say that all veterans are the same thing.
No. And I think no one would try to do that. I think right. The question really is, as we search for what is the mode of radicalization of individuals who then commit violence anywhere in the world, there are places that we have to look. And I think we don't really understand what turns someone into an individual who wants to commit violence. But idea that there is some potential trigger within the military, along with many other places in society, is an appropriate question to ask, yes?
Well, I think that the military is a profession of arms, and therefore, you know, you have the skill set to utilize firearms. But I would say that the veteran, the person who had actually been trained to use the firearm, is also trained with the discipline and discretion necessary to not use the firearm. And so I really believe that these two individuals are, they're anomalies, they're exception to the rules. And in this case, the problem isn't that there's veterans who are sort of, you know, going down the wrong path. It's the problem that the veterans or anybody, non-veterans, who go down the wrong path have access to firearms.
Although people who are for the Second Amendment would say that how are you going to control access to firearms for individuals like that? How is that any easier or more appropriate than trying to keep tabs on 22 million veterans? You know what I mean? It's just, you got to control access for everyone if you're going to control access for anyone.
I think that's exactly right. you have to control access for everyone. And I actually think it was Dallas Police Chief David Brown who might have said it best when it comes to this situation. He talked about the fact that he's asking lawmakers to do their jobs and to pass laws that both sides agree will help control access to guns for everyone and anyone who might be a danger to, you know, any portion of society, and that these lawmakers need to quit asking the police officers to be the ones who chime in and sort of do that for them. That this idea that the gun lobby is pushing a guns everywhere for everyone with no questions asked is just a deterrent to good law enforcement. And we're going to continue to see mass shootings and other egregious acts of violence committed by people who should otherwise have been prevented from owning a firearm.
Chris Marvin is a retired U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter pilot. He's now a principal at Marvin Strategies, a consulting firm that focuses on veterans-related issues and strategies. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.